The last thing he needed was for Silver to catch him grinning like an idiot. A lesser player like, say, the Banes, would have opened up immediately on the monsters. Even most good players might only throw on their usual rotation of pre-battle buffs. Silver wasn't doing either. Instead, each spell was tailored to her opponent, and her goal focused on inflicting the maximum possible damage in that first attack when the enemy would be most vulnerable, when she could strike the greatest number. It was a little thing, not something that would swing the fight wildly in their direction, but the sort that could add up to dozens of other small tweaks, leading to victory. It was that eye on perfection that separated Silver from the thousands upon thousands of players who had tried and failed to climb the tower as she had. "Until all is fire, fire burst!" Silver finished the incantation and raised her left hand, a ball of magical fire already coalescing into existence before her open palm. It hovered there for a moment as she closed one eye, squinting at the distant targets, then let fly with only a thought, the ball of fire streaking towards them. As one, the group of players braced for the shockwave of the spell, and they were not disappointed. Closer than the others, the force of its detonation would have toppled the waifish Celia from her feet if she hadn't been expecting it, and even further away, Caden wisely took a knee to bear the brunt of it. Then it happened again. And again. In all, the little ball of flame detonated a total of 6 times before its light finally flickered and extinguished. Each blast was accompanied by a mostly unreadable flood of damage notification on Caden's display. What he could read was enough to know that the spell was doing damage and that it had been perfectly chosen for the situation. Most of Silver's pre-combat spells usually applied to only a single spell, but in the case of Fireburst, they applied to each and every one of the concussive blasts, drastically increasing the overall effectiveness and the ratio of MP spent to damage dealt. Even better was the number of enemies hit. Despite its relatively small radius, the spell was centered in the middle of the archway separating the courtyard area from their party. Intelligent mobs, even ones as stupid as goblins, would shy away from the damage, waiting for the explosions to subside before racing after their foes. The undead, however? They were single-minded as any zombie movie would have Caden believe, and more than willing to stride through the repeated explosions if it meant getting closer to prey. The blood skeletons were half-dead by the time the first ones reached them, and they were well on their way to full dead not long afterward. Apart from his taunt, Caden didn't even feel it necessary to utilize his skills. He hacked at the creatures, chopping them limb from limb and interposing himself between them and his allies as they rushed them in ones and twos. Somehow, the zombies proved even less of a challenge despite their numbers and more hardy constitution. They were too slow, allowing the party to retreat whenever necessary, healing themselves and thinning out the enemy with ranged attacks before the melee fighters jumped back into the fray once again. Even the blood skeleton's surprise ability proved to be a non-starter. Caden could see what the developer had intended when he'd designed it. An enemy type that respawned into a weaker version of itself mid-combat could give a group fits in a number of situations. This was not one of them, however. Their method of kiting the zombies had inevitably taken them some distance away from the fallen skeletons, so far away, in fact, that they hadn't even realized the skeleton torsos had reanimated until they had already cleaned up the zombies and were on their way back to the keep.
"Anyone else feel like we overthought this?" Michael asked with a snicker as he sidestepped a groping hand from the prone upper body of a crimson skeleton.
Without the element of surprise, the things weren't a threat to anyone, even if it did take a half dozen stabs of the Juggernaut's rapier to put the thing to rest.
"I mean, we have the level and skill advantage." "Are you willing to bet your life on that?"
Caden shot back, slicing away the last HP from another of the downed foes.
"Good point."
And so it went. The courtyard ahead was vast, and even Caden's conservative estimate had proven wildly low. They pulled the enemy in twos and threes, in fives and tens. Each wave came with a retreat, splitting the monsters by speed to tear them apart piecemeal before returning for another group. It was slow going, but crucially, it was safe going. They kept their MP and TP up with short rests between draining fights, nibbling at snacks, or taking advantage of low-level consumables whenever one party member had expended more resources than the others. Within a half hour, they had cleared a path to the main doors of the keep, and within another 30, they had finished exterminating the last of the courtyard's undead to make sure they had a path to retreat.
"Anyone worth having?"
Shifty inquired as Celia and Michael picked over the last of the loot crystals dropped by the slain monsters.
"Some money, a lot of vendor trash,"
Celia said with a shrug.
"Oh, and two, count them, two minor potions of healing."
"They're trash mobs, what did you expect? Epic loot?"
Michael laughed. Celia stuck her tongue out.
"It would have been nice. I've been wearing the same pair of shoes for nearly 10 levels. I swear they're starting to wear out."
"Wait, didn't we find an upgrade sometime last week?"
Shifty asked, suddenly interested in the conversation once again.
"We did, yeah," Caden grinned. "What was your excuse for not upgrading again, Celia?"
The blonde chronomagi straightened up and began to swipe at the air in front of her, pretending not to hear him and quite possibly pretending to be using her AR display at all.
"Was it because they were ugly?" Michael asked. "And the new guy gets it in one," Caden laughed. "I feel her pain is all," the handsome juggernaut replied, the words muted by the concealing full helm he wore.
It was hard to tell if he was serious. Even as he edged up next to Celia, lifted a foot and tapped the side of it with a fingertip.
"These were a boss loot drop. I carried them around for 2 days until I got back to town and could have them dyed."
The admission brought a giggle to Celia's lips and a retch to Caden and Shifty's. The Dark Knight-looking juggernaut had proven effective in their early engagements, despite the fact that they hadn't had much opportunity to showcase his particular gimmick. He was talented as a fighter, but definitely more of a ladies' man than Caden had any taste for.
"Is it getting late? Any chance we could get this finished before sunrise, or am I just herding cats?"
Silver asked irritably. The sorceress was standing apart from their group. Her body leaned back against the stone wall to the right of decayed wooden doors of the keep. Everyone nodded their assent, but Caden couldn't help but notice the slight pout that formed on Celia's lips as Michael turned his attention away from her to the task at hand. That is going to be trouble later on. Or he was just jealous. No, not him. Never. Chapter 6. The door to Warrior's Keep didn't so much open as it collapsed under its own rotten weight as Michael and Caden wrenched it open. A smattering of termites and other vermin native only to Babel fell away from the disintegrating mess, leaving a wriggling pile that not one of them wanted to be the first to walk through. Sadly, Caden was the tank.
"I think I'd have preferred wall chicken to door roaches," Caden grumbled, kicking the largest bugs out of his path as he advanced.
The room beyond was lit only by the stray rays of moonlight that crept in through the damaged outer walls of the keep and the empowered light spell that Silver had bestowed upon his shield. When asked what the difference was between a light spell and an empowered light spell, she had only replied, "It's very bright." Creeping his way into that cavernous darkness with only a 20-foot bubble of light from his shield to guide him, it didn't feel very bright.
"Marco,"
came a female voice from behind him.
"Oh, shut up," he snapped back. "Are you coming or what?"
"Not with that attitude, Polo,"
Silver remarked, before turning her attention to Michael and beginning the incantation for a similar light enchantment. Each step on the stone floors echoed off into the darkness, repeated back to him from an obtuse angle that had him twitching involuntarily towards the invading sound. Slowly, pillars came into range of his light source, 5-foot-thick monoliths that reached from floor to ceiling in the cathedral-like entrance hall. 2 rows of such monoliths ran parallel to the door with a thick red carpet leading the way forward between them. Each column was just far enough apart that a new one came into view only as the previous one was vanishing behind him.
"Isn't this place a little bigger on the inside than it looks on the outside?" Michael asked as his own heavy footsteps fell into pace alongside Caden, their overlapping spheres of light expanding their view of the enormous hall.
"Not sure why you'd be surprised by that," Shifty replied. "Sort of Babel's thing, isn't it?"
Caden frowned.
"It is, but that sort of thing usually only happens behind an instance."
A sudden cacophony of stone and metal turned the whole party on their heel as the entrance they'd just recently passed began to crumble. For only an instant, Caden considered rushing the door, throwing himself beneath it to hold open a way for the others to escape, but he'd never have made it. In mere seconds, the entrance to the keep had crumbled to nothing more than a pile of rubble strategically placed to prevent any natural egress.
"Gate. Just had to jinx us, didn't you?" Silver grumbled.
"That is sort of his thing, isn't it?"
Celia said with a roll of her eyes.
"Well, going back is out of the question for the time being."
Caden did his best to ignore the jabs as he turned his attention back towards the darkness ahead of them.
"Scripted dungeon. We might as well keep on script."
With a murmur of agreement, they began to move, Caden in the lead, and Michael as their rear guard. They walked a few feet, listened, then walked again, each time taking care to listen for any scuttling monsters or pattering footsteps in the darkness that would otherwise have been concealed by conversation or the clatter of boots. Every so often the path diverged. Gaps opened up between one column and the next, and upon investigation, they found doorways leading to smaller rooms, staircases, or hallways. It felt wrong to leave such possibilities open at their back, but with nowhere to retreat, forward was as safe as backward. Besides, if they'd learned anything from video games, it was that ominous red carpets led to the boss. Their pace in that bubble of light amidst inescapable darkness was slower than any of them would have liked, but it did eventually produce results as the edge of their light crept over the first of a half dozen steps leading up to a closed double door.
"So, do we knock, or..."
Michael asked, with a tone so insufferable that Caden could hear his smug grin, even if he couldn't see it.
"When everyone is ready, I'll open it."
He looked among the group, his eyes lingering the longest over Silver. The mage took the hint, and Celia joined her as the two began to layer protective spells and damage boosts upon themselves and their party members. The whole process took a little more than a minute, complete with gaps of silence while they listened for some unseen beast waiting to spring from the shadows.
"Ugh, you forget how much of a pain it is to pre-buff when you don't have Rari's accelerated preparedness,"
Silver sighed as she completed her last spell.
"Our hearts bleed for you," Caden replied.
"I do lead a pained existence,"
she continued, enjoying how her banter seemed to irk him.
"Are we going, or..."
This time the young man replied with actions rather than words. He'd tested the door during their preparation and found it locked, so this time he hit it running, an armored shoulder splintering wood and causing the frame to buckle dangerously inward. It took two more blows, and the reluctant acceptance of help from Michael before the brace on the other side of the double doors finally shattered. The sound of fire greeted them, a sharp scrape and crack, like that of a match being struck. It accompanied the first flames as they burst into life, candlesticks, torches, and braziers nearest them all catching fire spontaneously, as though the opening of the door had provided the spark of oxygen they needed. Then a second row caught flame, then a third, and a fourth. Each row brought more life and color to the room. It had been a throne room at one point, perhaps. There was a dais at its far end, and another series of majestic columns on the outskirts of the room to give any entrant the feeling that they were small, insignificant. It lacked a proper regal seat, but with the amount of broken stone, wood, and refuse strewn throughout the room, it was entirely possible the components were still here. As the last row of combustibles took spark, a new sound grew to dominate the room. It was a grinding noise. Something heavy being dragged along something equally unyielding. Stone against stone. It was Celia who finally spotted the source, concealed as it was by the echoes of the open room. With her usual measure of understatement.
What are those?
All eyes followed hers to the ceiling. There were 5 circular holes cut into the stonework, each covered with metallic plates that was slowly, but surely, retreating into the framework next to it.
Nothing good,
Silver frowned, beginning an incantation. Her spell struck the ceiling right as the final few inches of plate were disappearing into the wall. It struck hard, an explosion that rocked the room and left Caden blinking away spots from the brightness of its flame. There was a massive crunch, something hitting the floor not far ahead of him, but as he blinked away the vestiges of Silver's spell, it was not the chunk of masonry that he had expected, hoped to see. Instead, it was a humanoid shape, devoid of gender or any defining features. It held a long blade in its right hand, and a kite shield strapped to its left, its posture low and ready for combat. It was only when the thing swiveled its faceless head in his direction and rolled its sword arm the same way he always did before a fight that he recognized it for what it was.
Doppelganger!
Silver shouted before Caden could even form the word. They were in trouble. Copycat monsters were a dime a dozen in the RPG, action, and even fighting games he played as a child. But to his knowledge, one had never been seen in Babel. If this were a full-strength clone of him, he'd have his work cut out, killing it before it killed him. But that was the least of their problems. 5 holes, 5 party members. That meant there was one for Silver. If it didn't come with her debuff, they were all dead. A second crack accompanied the fall of Michael's duplicate, followed by a third as Celia's double joined him. If they were coming down staggered, then Caden wasn't going to give them the time to regret that choice.
Personal skill use. Leap attack!
The bounding lunge carried him into the middle of the enemy formation, the weight of his falling blade striking down across Celia's marionette as the thing put its arms up in a futile attempt to block.
Personal skill use! Taunt!
He roared, following it with a wild cry as he met himself sword to sword. It was an unsettling feeling, recognizing his own mannerisms, his own swordsmanship at work.
Celia, heal me! Everyone, burn her down ASAP and keep away from...
An unnatural sound bellowed from his duplicate, and a sensation of unbridled anger washed over Caden as the noise struck him. How dare that thing? He'd kill it. He'd tear it limb from limb without the slightest care. It didn't matter that Michael's duplicate was trying to skirt around him to go after his party, or that the Celia copy was in the midst of some sort of spell, her distorted speech causing his ears to ache. Nothing mattered. He needed to kill this damned... Shifty's copy's trick shot hits you for 472 physical. Bleed. Movement impaired.
The goddamn thing just taunted me!
Caden realized only as the damage from the simulacrum's attack drew enough threat to break him out of the red, fogged fury inspired by his enemy's skill. On the one hand, he ought to thank it. On the other... It had dealt an 8 of his total HP, even with his overall HP increased with a greater durability rune spell. That had become a problem, as of late. He'd dumped level after level into rune magi, which granted him a whole host of mostly unmatched magical talent, yet it also weakened his primary role. He was good enough to tank so long as they were punching at or below their weight. But 10 levels in a magic user class had left his overall HP sorely wanting, which forced him to keep up with armor and skill alone. Celia and Shifty carried the difference. But if he was honest, he was probably the weakest link in their team, especially when he couldn't use his magic directly. Another hard thump sent Caden whirling, his sword already upraised as he called out,
"Skill use! Southern Cross!"
He'd known what he would find there before he'd even begun to turn. The other 4 were already fighting, which left the Silver copy, a smooth, doll-like creature already raising a hand in his direction.
Please work.
Your Southern Cross hit silver copy for 351 physical. Your Southern Cross hit Caden copy for 28. Blocked.
His first blow struck clean, giving him all the information and relief he could have wished for. So much so that he was only mildly perturbed when his doppelganger managed to interpose himself between blows with a judicious use of his cover skill. The real Silver wouldn't have taken anywhere near that much damage from such a low-level attack, nor would her HP bar have dropped so deeply as a result. The copy was subject to the same death penalties as the real one. They weren't instantly dead. Still, they were fighting their exact duplicates. Not the best time to be letting his guard down.
Celia! Cece! He shouted, calling for her crowd control spell to remove her opposite number from the field.
The words fell on deaf ears, however, or rather, absent ears. A quick look at the battlefield showed that his Celia was missing, even though the enemy's was alive and kicking. Short-lived confusion set in before Caden realized the obvious. They had beaten her to it.
Wonderful.
Huh. Okay, new plan.
Caden muttered in frustration, his mind racing for that new plan as he parried aside another blow from his faceless self, attempting to enter a blind spot in his shield to get another swing at the woman behind him.
Michael, do your thing!
The other man laughed. Like you need to tell me.
The copies knew how to use the skills they were given. That much was obvious. But would they know how to combo them? And more importantly, would they know enough to avoid what was coming next? Michael lowered his rapier and began slamming his free fist against the thick metal chest plate. It was a taunt, similar but not identical to Caden's. Caden's drew aggro by cranking his threat through the roof, defaulting enemy targeting to him until someone else did enough damage to draw it away. Michael's, by contrast, was a mind-affecting ability. No matter the threat, every enemy in range would attack him if able for the duration of the ability. Once it was over, his aggro would return to its original state, allowing him to choose when and how he wanted to be struck. As expected, the clones swarmed him. The enemy Silver shot a bolt of lightning that cascaded off a crimson gauntlet, while two knives from their shifty dug perilously deep into an exposed joint area. Entropy spells and rapier strikes peppered the Cardinal Knight, forcing him back as his HP bar began to deplete. Michael's allies used the moment to their advantage, giving nearly as good as their temporary savior was taking, but the taunt didn't make their enemies stupid. They still defended themselves, even if the focus of their attacks was Michael. Caden took the moment to pressure his foe, and felt a swell of pride as he forced the creature out of the boundary of its grasp-the-world ability. That pride was fleeting. However, as he saw the stumbling creature level its sword parallel to the ground, its palm stretched in Michael's direction.
Aya.
Michael, mitigate! He shouted.
Natha.
A ripple of distorted violet flame erupted from the foe Caden's hand, the runic energy racing towards Michael, who just barely turned to face it in time. Unlike Caden's guardian class, Michael's juggernaut was focused almost entirely on passive damage resistance. Where Caden blocked, Michael soaked, allowing his armor to take the brunt of the damage dealt to him. With higher HP, the effect was usually around the same. But even a juggernaut couldn't face-tank everything. Fortunately for them both, Caden's warning had arrived in time, the flame washing around Michael as his force of will ability allowed him to dissipate the majority of what would have otherwise been crippling, perhaps even fatal damage.
"What the hell was that?"
Michael demanded.
"Later!"
Caden shouted, pressing the attack against his duplicate to prevent a second spell from finishing the job.
Get shifty!
Like I need you to...
Michael laughed again, too distracted in the moment to finish the thought. He flourished his blade as he advanced on the retreating rogue, his longer steps closing the distance despite two more daggers clattering off the edges of his plate. The advance was relentless, but if the copies understood the danger, they did nothing to react to it appropriately. The proper response was to get the hell away from him. At level 10, the Juggernaut class gained a new resource called Momentum, a pool that built with every point of damage they took. Once a Juggernaut had taken enough damage to fill the pool, they gained temporary access to two different abilities, Unstoppable and Immovable. Immovable negated all damage taken by the next hit, making it an outstanding ability for tanking, if a tad situational. The opposite, Unstoppable, was an attack ability that would quadruple damage dealt by the next successful hit. It sounded good on paper, but the inability to pair it with an active skill made it decidedly underwhelming for such a situational ability. Unless you had a way to guarantee a critical hit, such as, say, a duelist's blade flourish skill. The tip of Michael's rapier jabbed into the fake Shifty's torso just below the left side of the ribs. Hardly a crippling blow under normal circumstances, the combination of the two abilities caused the copy's body to detonate like a bomb, a cloud of ash erupting from the gaping wound where its torso used to be as the two halves of its body skittered to a stop a half dozen feet away. It was an incredible combination. One Caden was vaguely sad he hadn't thought of himself, and one he was hard-pressed to beat. He'd been racking his brain ever since Michael had divulged the gimmick on how best to confront it, hypothetically speaking. Thus far, his best solutions were to burn Michael down before he could activate the ability, successfully block or dodge it, or run for the 30 seconds it took for his charge to dissipate. He almost felt sorry for the poor, dumb copies. "Silver next!" he shouted, seeking to press what advantage they had. It wouldn't be long before Celia returned from her exile through time, but he'd feel a lot safer if they could take out at least one more of the enemy damage dealers before that happened. "I've got Michael!" That was the other major problem with the strategy. Killing an equal-level mob from half health in a single strike generated a lot of aggro, which wasn't exactly ideal right after taking enough damage to activate the skill in the first place. Then again, that was what tanks were for. Caden rushed forward, utilizing his cover ability to put himself between Michael and the remaining enemies moments before the first wave of their assault struck. Magic of all forms assaulted him, a hail of metal darts and that same runic fire from his own copy paired neatly with all manner of elemental magics from Silver's fingertips. The latter came slower and slower as the seconds ticked by, however, as Shifty's daggers and the real Silver's magics began to find purchase in the slender doll. Eventually, their combined assault began to overwhelm the duplicate Celia's healing prowess, and the enemy copy of their cocky magi fell to a flurry of attacks. It was their fight. Caden smiled in relief. 4-3. No, 5-3, he corrected himself as Celia's status bar reappeared on the corner of his display. The copies didn't stand a chance. Still, no reason to be cocky, however, particularly with the walking nuke that was Michael still on the enemy side of the field. "Healer next!" Caden ordered, moving forward to engage the looming form of the enemy juggernaut, crying out a taunt to keep his attention before adding, "Nice of you to join us, Celia."
"So that is what that feels like,"
she laughed nervously, briefly studying her own hands, as if uncertain if what she was seeing was real.
"Celia!"
Silver demanded, snapping her fingers.
"A little focus." "Easy for you to say,"
Celia pouted before starting into a healing incantation. The cleanup that followed was easy compared to the nail-biting terror that had led up to it. Outnumbered and down the majority of their damage dealers, the enemy force simply couldn't outpace them. Their Celia was brought down by a combined barrage of attacks, and mercifully, their Caden at last fell shortly after that, though not before one more taunt uncomfortably manipulated Caden's psyche. With Michael the last of their group, They defaulted to a mix of Caden's two ideal strategies, the five of them pouring damage onto him until his ability activated, followed by kiting him to death while Caden played keep away with his taunts. In all, the fight must have been measured in minutes, but to Caden, at least, it felt like hours, perhaps days. His hands were lead weights at the end of his arms, barely mobile. His fingers ached from gripping the hilt of his sword, and he wondered, briefly, if he'd ever get the feeling of vibration out of his left arm. He'd had more dangerous fights, but never something so long, nor with such uncertainty from the very outset. The faces of his allies all told the same tale. All but Silver. The physical exhaustion was there, but not the mental. Her eyes were clear and thoughtful, introspective as if she were plotting the next 10 moves in a chess match rather than standing in the aftermath of a life-or-death struggle. It made sense, he supposed, that a woman with her experience would not have the same reaction, yet it was unnerving all the same. Would he have eyes like that one day? And if he did, would that be a good thing or a bad thing?
We should grab their loot, Shifty said at last.
Ever the mercenary,
Celia giggled. When he stiffened at that comment, her hands immediately came up, covering her face as the circumstances of the evening came back to her.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean...
It's fine. I think we're all pretty damn exhausted, Shifty replied with his most soothing tone. But the sooner we get on with this, the sooner we can sleep and figure out our next step. So grab your doppelganger.
The group nodded their agreement, and each went in search of their fallen doppelganger, collecting the small glowing crystal from amidst the dissipating ash. There was the usual, of course, currency, crafting components, and vendor trash, but two items immediately stood out. Mage Blade, +3. A mage blade of the Ellesmere style. It imparts powerful magical benefits to the initiated. One hand damage, 65 to 85. One hand damage, mage, 85 to 125. Required level, 7. Required strength, 7. Required dexterity, 13. Durability, 25. Energy, +7. Empower, 1, once per day. Special. This weapon has increased damage for anyone with at least 5 levels in a spellcasting class. Deed to Bastion. Ownership and acceptance of this item entitles and entrusts command over the walled city of Bastion and all lands and territories within 10 miles in all directions. The first was a straight upgrade over his existing sword. He had already tempered his blade twice since obtaining it, increasing the original mage blade he'd gotten from Rap Rat to a +2 variety, so it made sense thematically that they'd give him a +3 as a reward. His allies reported similar findings, though each of them had gotten a second piece of upgraded gear rather than a deed of their own. Caden snapped his fingers to bring up his AR menu and dug down into his inventory, locating the deed in an open space of his pack and summoned it to hand. It was a positively ancient-looking scroll, the paper yellowed and so brittle that the very idea of trying to open it filled him with dread. Despite that fear, however, the document seemed to actively resist damage as he opened it, gaining unnatural flexibility the moment the vellum would have otherwise been pushed to its limits. A series of notifications barraged Caden's display as the first glowing words of the document came into sight. Chime after chime dinged in his ear as his log was flooded with the phrase, "New rune learned." The document was written in the Great Emperor's runes, he saw, but each shone with eldritch power the very nature of the document imparting the meaning of the words he was seeing, which in turn added them to his lexicon. Was this another way he could have stumbled onto his unique class? Or just an interesting interaction of the two? Either way, Any pouting over subpar loot drops was long gone as the document added well over 100 new words to his vocabulary, bringing him to over 1,100 words known. Halfway to his next major boost. Ironically, even translated, the document was almost illegible. His enthusiasm for the addition to his lexicon flagged somewhat as he realized that words like heretofore and forthwith were among those he'd just discovered. The legalese was strong with this one. The one thing that was easy to understand were the two options that revealed themselves at the bottom of the unrolled page. I accept, and I decline. It wasn't enough to merely possess the document. He had to agree to its terms. Its very complicated, magically binding terms. Wonderful.
Any of you know how to speak lawyer? Caden asked, after giving the document another fruitless pass with his eyes.
I took Law 10 in high school?
Celia chirped. Silver and Shifty each shook their heads, but Michael was advancing, his arm outstretched for the scroll. He took it when offered, and scanned it for barely an instant before handing it back.
Pre-law before I ended up here, but I'm not going to be much use to you.
Why not?
Paper looks blank to me, Michael explained.
Ah, damn, Caden grumbled.
Because of course, Babel couldn't ever just make something easy. Then again, it wasn't like he had much of a choice anyway.
What was he going to do? Not accept ownership of the castle and surrounding lands? Like that'd help.
He touched the I accept option. The braziers and torches throughout the room flared to life at that touch, and behind them, he could hear the sound of sparks and fire as light flooded the entrance hall from whence they'd come. The room around them shifted subtly as well. The moss between stones retreating, the door that they'd smashed in their entrance knitting itself back together. The keep was coming alive under their very feet, even the cool night air of the place replaced by a toasty fireside sensation.
Home sweet home, Caden murmured.
Chapter 7.
You're up early,
Silver remarked with a sly grin as Caden arrived.
You're one to talk, he shot back.
The young woman was as pretty and made up as ever, but there was no covering the heavy bags under her eyes.
Couldn't sleep either, huh?
She shook her head.
Not in the slightest.
Because you're worried about all of us dying? Or because you want to see how this all works?
Yes?
Caden snorted with laughter.
Hey, at least you're honest.
Crisp footsteps were fast approaching from behind Caden. The young man was forced to step aside to admit Valceris, Roberta, and, to his surprise, Michael. The latter appeared to be just barely awake, his baby blue eyes squinting, even in the dim light of the study.
Field Marshal?
Valceris said sharply before he snapped to attention. Long seconds passed before Caden finally realized what the pink-haired soldier was waiting for and gestured for him to relax.
Good morning, Valceris. Roberta, I appreciate you being so prompt.
He wasn't sure on that last point, having left his AR glasses back in his room in his fumbling haste to get here on time. But their arrival with Michael certainly suggested it.
Is everything ready?
As requested.
This time it was Roberta, the diminutive gray-haired woman smiling in satisfaction of her own pronouncement as she gestured to a nearby table.
Better, in fact, with the recovery of this from the tower store room.
Caden turned his attention to the oaken-legged table that dominated the center of the room, his brows knitting together in confusion as he studied it. The top of its surface was dominated by a scale model of what appeared to be the majority of the second floor. Mountains capped with white snow rose from its surface, while small puddles filled in for lakes and other large bodies of water. Ilo, Sune, and Bastion were all represented, along with a small representation that he could only assume stood in for the location of the tomb of the Lyre King.
A gorgeous model,
Caden admitted at last. Though I'm not sure it is better. The more tactile view of the landscape is nice, but the screen I'd requested would be more useful for organizing our forces. Roberta shook her head. If she was annoyed, she made no sign of it. Instead, she drew closer, reaching out a slim-fingered hand to take hold of his and press it against the side of the table.
I assure you, Field Marshal, it is far superior. But first, I surrender ownership to Caden.
With that touch, the model rippled and began to collapse. Mountains and cities faded back into a dull gray surface in a matter of seconds, then coalesced back into a new image just as quickly. This time, the model was not of the floor, but of Bastion itself. As before, the entire top of the table was taken up by the replica, though this time the scale was different. Caden could now see individual soldiers walking the battlements, with others patrolling the streets or manning the front gate. The city itself was a wonder of detail, as if the world's best miniature model had spent a lifetime hunched over a magnifying glass to apply every minute detail imaginable. Due to its scale, it was still imperfect, but it was without a doubt as close as one could get, given the limitations.
Amazing, Michael said softly from the sidelines.
To put it mildly, Silver said in quiet admiration. Caden's head turned in her direction, surprised. This isn't something your guild has? Silver paused for a moment, considering whether or not to reply before shaking her head.
No. The guild hall has something similar, but nothing quite this detailed. They wouldn't,
Roberta said with perhaps a little too much glee.
This is known as a warframe. One of only 99 in existence, most of which are reputed to be on the upper 50 floors.
I'll sell it to you guys if we get out of the—
No, you will not,
Roberta said with a stomp of her foot.
The table is bound to Bastion and will not—
It was a joke, Roberta, Caden said dryly.
Oh, my mistake, Field Marshal.
Just Caden, please. It feels weird having you call me that,
Caden smiled, but the sour expression on the older woman's face didn't budge.
So, this warframe, tell me more about it.
That seemed to put some life back into her.
The warframes are relics of the Great Emperor, powerful artifacts placed in places of future need.
Event items, then,
Silver said.
I don't suppose you know where we can find the others, then.
Roberta shook her head, and Caden shot the Magi a look that returned with equal ferocity.
What? I wouldn't be a good gamer if I didn't ask.
Continue, Roberta,
Caden said, rolling his eyes. Silver wasn't wrong, but that didn't stop it from annoying him.
The frames themselves are items of immense significance,
Roberta gestured to one of the soldiers pacing the outer walls. Eventually, Caden took her meaning and reached out to touch the soldier. It felt both smoother and cooler than he'd expected, like touching a shaded pebble on a hot summer day. As he touched it, a small spray of particles erupted from the edges of the table, floating upwards into the air before coalescing into a dark gray pane filled with text.
Aleph. Level 10. Elan Infantry. HP 100 out of 100. MP, 0 out of 0. TP, 100 out of 100. Move, 130. Attack, 10. Defense, 10. Special, none. Resistances, none. Weaknesses, none.
What am I looking at? Caden asked as the window floated above him.
Before either of his advisors could speak, he clarified,
I know these must be his stats, but this isn't a normal interface. If it is, these can't be correct.
The HP is too low, Michael added, stating the obvious.
And mobs don't have a movement stat.
This from Silver. She was studying the floating screen with the same intensity as Caden, the two talking over one another as the same realization hit them.
Mass combat rules?
I'm sorry, Field Caden,
Roberta said.
I'm not familiar with the term. Valseris?
The stern man replied with a simple shake of his head.
It is my understanding that the Warframe produces a sort of summary of military strength, allowing for informed tactical decisions to be made by even the most novice of military commanders.
So, mass combat rules, Caden nodded, running a weary hand through his hair as he sought to wrap his mind around what he was seeing.
Neither of you have any idea how this works, do you? Not directly, Field Marshal, Valseris admitted. I've been assigned to assist you with strategic and tactical matters, but this I am not familiar with.
Wonderful. So we're going to be learning by trial and error, Caden groaned.
Better than having some Navi shouting in your ear, "Hey, look!" isn't it? Silver smirked.
He pondered that for a moment, then grudgingly agreed.
A tutorial would still be nice. How are we seeing this? Michael asked, seemingly ignoring the other two for his own thoughts.
The updates, I mean. Is it real time? If so, is it some sort of divination, or...
It is a form of natural mind magic, as I understand it,
Roberta explained.
When I transferred ownership of the frame to you, it linked to the mind of every being under your command. It registers their senses and reproduces them here.
So if they see an enemy...
Then the enemy would appear on the frame as well,
she nodded.
And depending on the qualities of the unit involved, as well as prevailing conditions, the frame can provide you with varied information about the opponent.
A real-life board game within a real-life video game, Michael remarked with equal parts wonder and horror.
Certainly looks that way, Caden nodded. Then he turned his attention to Valseris.
Order 100 of the men to the courtyard. And see if we have any sort of sparring or training weapons that we can give them. I'd rather we not have to risk our troops to do some tests. Why are you looking at me like that?
Valseris was indeed looking at him like that. It was an expression that was hard to describe. Not quite confusion, but something beyond that. Like he was asking him to do the dumbest thing on earth and, being the professional he was, Valseris was trying to find a polite way to verbally slap some sense into him.
Field Marshal. Caden, he cut in. The man bristled at that. No, Field Marshal. You are my superior officer, and when dealing with formal business, I would prefer to address you as such.
Rebuking his superior didn't come easy to the other man, and it took him a moment before he could finish the thought that he had started.
You do not need to give me instructions on how to direct the troops. The frame allows you to make your will known directly.
Caden turned his attention back to the table, a frown pulling at the corner of his lips. Natural mind magic, she had said. It wasn't enough that the frame allowed him to essentially peek on the vision of every soldier under his command, but he could move them directly? Tentatively, he reached out and touched the same soldier he had begun with. The figure didn't move as he poked and prodded it, nor was he capable of lifting it from the table itself. Which made sense. This was a projection, not some godlike interface where a black-and-white-style divine hand was descending from above to move the units he'd selected.
Try touching him and touching somewhere else?
Silver suggested. It was better than any idea Caden had in mind, but ultimately, no more successful.
Double-click?
This time the words came from Michael.
Yeah, because that'll... work. Damn.
He'd humored the other man even as he'd taunted him, thinking that proving his point by acting on it would keep any argument to a minimum. To his shock, however... Caden watched as a vibrant blue line erupted from the soldier he'd touched to the area he'd double-clicked. Almost immediately, the man turned and began to march down the street as indicated. He took the shortest, safe route to the destination, and once he arrived, he stopped and stood motionless. To his surprise, Michael didn't have any snappy comeback, or even any petulant or snippy reply. The man, like the other two humans in the room, stood in silence. No doubt his mind was processing the same sort of complicated thoughts and emotions running through Caden's.
Do they have to obey when ordered like this? Caden asked at last.
A soldier will always obey an order, Valseris insisted.
That wasn't what I meant, he shot back. Do they have to follow the order? Does the frame compel them to do so?
Valseris fell silent, either unable or unwilling to answer. In the end, it was Roberta who did so.
I cannot say for certain, but my best guess is yes and no.
Well, that is certainly helpful,
Silver frowned.
Apologies, Lady Silver.
The mage snorted at that, but Roberta continued unabated.
It is a difficult subject to discuss. What do you know of mind magic?
In truth, it was a subject about which Caden knew very little.
Mind magic was Elan magic, similar to the transmutation or illusion magics that Aaron and Vincent, his rune magi instructors, had specialized in.
He knew that they were grouped into a number of spheres, but beyond that, not a lot else. It hadn't been pertinent to his build order or his strategy for playing the game, and there was little enough information out there about it as it was.
One of the 21 spheres of Elan magic. It is sort of what it sounds like, isn't it? Michael asked. Manipulation and domination of the mind?
Roberta shook her head.
Perhaps to a layman, but it is far more than that. The magic of those who stayed is the magic of fundamental creation. Life, death, mind, shadow, fire. Each of the 21 spheres of magic reflects an unbridled natural power,
she explained.
The magic of your arcanists touches on this power, drawing and mixing to create its effects, while the magic of the divine draws power from the great emperor or his surrogates. An Elan spellcaster draws power exclusively from a single sphere, a transmutationist from the manipulation sphere, or a pyromancer from fire.
But there are arcane pyromancers, Michael interjected.
Roberta shook her head.
It is not the same. Even your pyromancers dabble in other magics. They have powers universal to all disciplines and can learn from outside their discipline, even if they are more limited. An Elan might twist their source into unique shapes and permutations, but it always originates from one source. In addition to the manipulated magic of the Elan, however, there is natural magic. The existence of elements in nature, of good and evil, time and energy, all of these exist as natural manifestations of the spheres of power.
And mind magic? Caden asked.
I was getting to that.
Roberta smiled softly.
Emotions, thoughts, and ideologies are all part and parcel of mind magic. Among those, the concept of loyalty.
She gestured to the table, to the man that Caden had ordered.
This man has sworn loyalty to you, and as a result, the Warframe can impart your orders to him. So long as his loyalty is sufficient, he will follow them unquestioningly.
Michael cocked his head to the side quizzically.
Sufficient?
Roberta shrugged slightly.
The mind sphere is nearly as far outside my expertise and understanding as one can get, but I believe there are spells that can qualify, perhaps even quantify loyalty.
Like a stat? Caden pressed.
In a manner similar to the way the frame quantifies combat statistics, yes,
Roberta replied.
Considering the dangers the troops Duke Elazio provided you with should be unquestioning in their loyalty. Short of literal suicidal orders, they should obey any command they are given.
And there was the rub.
Caden blanched at the thought. It was one thing to be put in charge of Elan troops, giving them verbal orders and fighting alongside them. But this? For all the discussion leading up to it, the answer Roberta had given him had been the one he'd dreaded. These men would do what he forced them to do. The frame wasn't giving orders to soldiers. It was pulling the strings of puppets.
This is wrong, he said at last, looking at his two Elan advisors. Don't you see that? I mean, you must.
Roberta eyed him for a moment, then reached for the table itself. With just a few manipulations, she directed its focus to the tower, then to the study itself. He could see the Elan there, two black figurines across the table from three similar figures made out of white stone.
With respect, Field Marshal, I believe I know better than you do.
It took him a moment to catch her meaning, his guts wrenching when he finally did.
The frame manipulates natural loyalty, Valseris explained. But I have a stronger loyalty to my men than I do to you, Field Marshal.
That is why we tested it on ourselves before bringing it here. The effect is not one of domination, but of suggestion,
Roberta continued for him.
A subtle distinction, but one we are willing to endure for the greater good of the task at hand.
Valseris nodded.
My soldiers would obey any order from your lips, short of suicidal orders. That the orders come differently makes little difference.
Caden looked to Silver, then to Michael. Of the two, only Michael seemed to have the same expression of discomfort that Caden knew was plastered across his own face.
They're right, Silver said at last.
He shook his head, but she pressed on with the thought despite him.
It is a little messed up, sure, but given the option, I'd say we're way better off directing them through this thing than out in the field.
I know it makes sense from a game sense, but these are people we're talking about.
No, Caden, she shut him down. They are Elan. There is a difference. Look, I'll show you. Command, privacy.
Roberta and Valseris spoke in near unison.
Excuse us, Field Marshal.
We'll leave you to discuss this in private. No, stop, he ordered,
wincing at how quickly they stopped in their tracks.
They're different, I'll grant you, but they're still people.
Look, if you don't have the stomach to use this, you can go out and I'll manage things from here, Silver snorted.
You cannot, Valseris said sternly. The troops will only follow Caden or those he has commissioned in his service. You are neither.
Silver waved in the direction of Valseris.
There you go. Deputize me and you can go out in the field without having to worry about any of this.
Her voice turned sickly sweet as she continued.
I'll even stay nice and safe just like you wanted.
Caden's skin warmed, and his nostrils flared as he struggled to fight down the anger welling up inside him.
Okay, that is it, Silver, he growled. You've had it out for me since Immolatus. What the hell is your problem?
Didn't I make it clear enough last night in the tavern? She shot back, glaring daggers. Here, I'll use small words. You act like this is a game.
You do. Maybe this isn't, Michael started, trying to interpose himself between the two, before a harsh look from each sent him packing. You really think that?
Of course I do, Silver snarled. You have a unique skill, the first unique skill I or anyone else has ever heard of, but you don't share any details with the CFC. You have a grand quest that, for all we know, could be the secret to defeating Sobal's demon. But do you accept our help? No, because you want to do it yourself. How many people do you think have died while you've been playing the special little snowflake gamer?
Silver, I...
No, she snapped. You asked, and I'm not done.
Her hand gestured towards Valseris once again, then out to the courtyard at large.
How many players do you think are left on this floor right now?
I have no idea, Caden said, biting his cheek to keep from snapping at her.
238,
Roberta chimed in quietly.
I'm sorry, what? Caden asked.
There are 238 bloodline descendants currently remaining on this floor.
How could you possibly know that?
The answer came to him even before the diminutive Elan finished pulling up the list on the warframe. It was just a list of names and levels, with a small counter at the top left corner to give a numbered total.
Nearly 250 players.
Silver shook her head.
Hundreds of people, and you are debating on whether or not it is okay to use the best tool we have at our disposal to keep them safe?
I'm not debating anything. It's a question of free will.
They are Elan!
One of the woman's hands raked through waves of her long raven hair, fingers crooked as though she were about to tear it out at any moment.
They have no more free will than my shoe. Elon are no different than any other mob in the tower. They're just better at pretending to be alive.
I've had quite enough.
Command silence,
Silver said flatly, choking off Alceris in the middle of his outburst.
Enough,
Caden finished for the man who could no longer speak.
You don't